What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 128 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a massive breakdown podcast. We're coming to you today on a fantastic Sunday afternoon, ready for the continuation and conclusion, hopefully, if we have enough time, of our five-part Geonosis arc, the second battle of Geonosis. So today we're going to be talking about Legacy of Terror and Brain Invaders, which is like a two-part zombie episode that I really, really enjoy. It's one of the arcs I remember the most from the early seasons of Clone Wars. I think it sparked a continuing desire to see horror done in Star Wars. Yeah. And what I actually didn't know is, like, obviously I didn't watch Clone Wars when it first came out. I watched it during COVID for the first time. This, I always talk about the Death Troopers novel. The Death Troopers novel came out the same year this came out.
Right.
So they did two zombie stories at the same time in Star Wars, completely developed independently of one another. And then they basically have never done a Star Wars zombie story again, which continuously breaks my heart. But first, let's go ahead and get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Kutchin. How are you doing today, Kit?
I am doing pretty well. Spent a little time celebrating with we've got an upcoming wedding in the family. And so had a joint bachelorette party to attend last night, which is why we're recording in the afternoon in part. Certainly I'm feeling a lot better this afternoon than I was this morning. Can't party like I used to, but I am I'm happy to be talking about Star Wars. I had a nice relaxing afternoon rewatching these episodes, and they're so much fun. Like you said, totally random. They do like their only two zombie stories in Star Wars same year. I was really hoping actually when Rebels went back to Geonosis that we would get a zombie story in Rebels. We didn't. So I feel like it was a little bit of a missed opportunity, at least for the horror Star Wars fans, like you and I think. But I think it shows what's possible. It shows what can be done when you lean into those, the strangeness of the Star Wars universe. There's a lot of strange stuff. It's a big galaxy, as they like to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm pumped, man. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Also, very tired. Been flying a decent amount the last 2 days, and yeah, just did the same as you. Came in, lay down on the couch. Well, first made myself some tacos, lay down on the couch, and then watched these two episodes. And yeah, I'm always struck by how fun these episodes are. It's like, I have difficulty like paying attention to the dialogue close enough to criticize it or do anything because I'm just so enjoying watching what's going on that I feel like the entire episode passes it up. Like, oh, I was supposed to be watching that with a critical eye. But I've enjoyed myself so much that I don't do it, which I think is a sign of a great episode. Right? Yeah. Cause in the end, it's all about having fun.
It is.
And the featurettes on these episodes were, interesting as well. Particularly the second one, Brain Invaders, where they talk about like, yeah, this is scary. Like this is scary for what Star Wars does. It's much scarier than it usually does. And of course, Dave Filoni says he would not have done an episode like this if it were just the scary part. Like there has to be that like lesson at the end that Ahsoka has where she spends some time with, functionally her mentor, her older brother, Anakin, and they like talk about what happened and like they have that resolution. And he said, you can't do something like this in Star Wars without having that resolution because the kids need to understand that there's scary stuff out there. Bad things can happen, but you've got, a support system around you and you've got people you can talk to about it. And you don't have to just like weather these storms and then bury them down deep inside you, which I thought was surprisingly deep for a featurette.
Yeah. No, it is. And so funny story, actually. So my daughter's been watching Clone Wars for years, right? Like we watched it, I think for the first time when she was like four. And she doesn't really do like scary movies and stuff. But for some reason, even movies that are like kids scary movies, quote unquote scary, where it's there's never really any real danger. It's very clear the whole time that no one's really going to get hurt. It's always played up for comedic effect. Won't do it. This doesn't bother her in the slightest. And I think, it's because it's Star Wars And so she showed it to a friend, right? She had a friend over. They'd been playing. They wanted to have a snack and watch the show. And I was like, okay, sure. And I should have been paying better attention. You know, we've got like the kids account or whatever for Disney set up. And she was younger. This was a few years ago, but she shows her friend who's younger than her Brain Invaders. And boy, if I don't hear that this poor kid is having nightmares about brain worms.
Yeah.
Oh, man. A lesson learned. Pay attention to what your kids are watching and, more importantly, what they're showing their friends.
Yeah, I mean, there's some spooky stuff in this, right? Like when the clones get invaded and they like stand up for the first time and like the bones are cracking and they do that like horror thing where they just like stand up without using their arms or whatever. And it's very spooky. And like the white eyes and the worm coming out of the mouth and stuff like that. Like, yeah, they took a lot of like horror story tropes and put them in here, and it's an animated medium, you know, and I can see how it would be pretty spooky for younger kids.
Yeah.
Like, especially if this was like their first introduction to a like body snatchers parasite style story, right? Like if this was the first one you ever saw of this, which for a lot of young kids it probably is,
right?
Then that's like extra special spooky, because for us it's like, you know, it's obviously there's a lot of stereotypes, there's a lot of tropes in the story that have been used, but like I've seen 100 other things that have used those tropes over the years, because I'm, you know, almost 35 years old. I'm sure so have you. So when I saw it for the first time, it's like, oh, I'm recognizing these horror story tropes that are being used. But if it's the first time you've ever seen those horror story tropes, then there's a reason that they're effective, right? And so it's probably, you know, quite spooky. So I give him credit for doing something like this. Like I've said time and time again, like I think the two things that the Star Wars universe could use a little bit more of are horror and comedy, because I think the Star Wars universe is ripe for this. There's scary shit in the Star Wars universe. Like they touch on it, right? Like every once in a while, there'll be like something in the background that's really scary.
Yeah.
But they very rarely do a full story that is focused on it. And that's probably why this is one of my favorite arcs. And, you know, obviously we continually pitch a Star Wars style sitcom, you know, a Lower Deck style Star Wars thing. And we keep pitching that. Maybe one day they'll do it. But, you know, it's these shows are best when they don't take themselves too seriously. And I think the horror and comedy genres lend themselves very well to not taking yourself too seriously.
Right. Yeah. There's sort of like a kind of a knowing look. It's like, okay, hey, today we're doing body snatchers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, play along and we'll all have fun.
That seems to be a lot of what season two was, is like, hey, pick your favorite like movie and or TV show episode and let's do a Star Wars version of it.
Yeah.
And like this entire arc basically has been pick your favorite and like let's do a Star Wars version of it, which I think has actually been very effective.
It has been. You know, I feel like I forgot that season two is actually really quite good.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep waiting to hit the less good season two episodes. I know there are some that we just don't enjoy as much, but we have really been on a roll where, especially with this chronological watch through, it's just been like great early Clone Wars episode after great episode, one after the other. And, you know, also fun. Of course, we get a lot more time with Barriss Offee, and we get to spend some more time looking at the interactions between her and Ahsoka and that developing relationship. And, you know, we get an incident that probably contributes to, you know, a growing disaffection with the war in Barriss. I can't imagine that she comes back after this and is just like, yeah, I'm totally ready. In fact, is there a story arc out there about her not wanting to go back? I feel like, I can't remember.
Before the like bad arc.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there was, because I think her betrayal in season five is like completely and totally a surprise,
right?
Because they hadn't like had any instances of her being like outspokenly opposed to what the Jedi were doing.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I'm remembering. But I could definitely see Barriss being like, I need an extended break after this. Like, mm-hmm. can I work in the archives for a year?
Yep.
Pretty rough run for her. Well, let's dive in. We've got housekeeping.
Yeah, but we don't really have any housekeeping this week. So
okay.
No Patreon news, no new podcast reviews. So just remember, guys, if you want to support the show, best thing you can do besides listening is pledge to the Patreon, even if it's at the lower tier levels. But if you want some cool Beneath Twin Suns merch, then pledge at the higher tier levels and you can get that. And if you really want to support the show, 5-star reviews on Apple Podcast and Spotify help us out immensely. So do either of those two things and we will appreciate you forever. Give you a personalized shout out on the show. And we could just jump right into Legacy of Terror. So Legacy of Terror, the featurette with Dave Filoni is very interesting when he's talking about this, because he said originally they'd done almost the entire episode and they were in the process of editing the episode and they did not have the sandstorm. And they had instead these like beautiful wide sweeping vistas, but he just felt like the episode was missing something. He felt like the episode was a little bit boring. And so they came up with this idea of a sandstorm that, you know, changes everything, basically. It gives them a reason for why they can't go after Luminara. It gives them a reason why they have to rush to try to get to the temple in the first place. It gives them a reason why it's hard to track Poggle. It basically solved a bunch of problems that the episode had with, like, pacing early on. And he said, you know, Star Wars, he actually made mention of this, which is kind of funny. He said a lot of times Star Wars will say something has to be a certain way, and they won't even bother to explain why it has to be that way. But he's like, he likes to try to explain that when he can. That's something we've talked about before that we appreciate, lampshading, right? When you do something that needs an explanation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's helpful if you provide some sort of explanation or at least an acknowledgement that you're not going to provide an explanation, right? Because when you just throw something in there and then you totally disregard it, that's when people start to pick things apart.
Right.
So if you just said, oh, we can't go after Luminara right now, and then you move past that part of the story, people are going to watch it and they're going to be like, why couldn't you just go after Luminara right now? Like, why is she having trouble tracking Poggle? Like, all these questions, they were able to answer them all by just adding a sandstorm on top of it. And then he said, in addition to that, the sandstorm allowed them to do this really fun thing with the sound editing, where when you're outside, the sandstorm is like really loud and oppressive. And when you're inside, it's like muffled and it's in the background. And he said that added like a nice bit of tension to the episode. That, like, you know that outside there's this like horrible thing happening that's very ominous and very scary and very dangerous. But and you're like inside, you're sheltered from it. So when they say, oh, we can't go after her, the gunships can't take it, you feel that that is the truth, right? Because you just heard the sandstorm outside and now you're inside and you hear how deadened it is. And you're like, oh, that's a powerful storm.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, the sound design for this episode is great. It does add a lot of atmosphere. In a very literal sense. And I feel like that combination of, like, you know, the noise of the storm being so loud outside and them then having trouble communicating. This is an important horror trope, right? Setting up that one person can't talk to another is... It's one of those things that is played on in so many horror movies, right? That's why horror movies take place in, you know, some small town out in the middle of nowhere, you know, in a cabin in the woods, or, you know, that old house on the hill, and suddenly you don't have cell phone service, or, you know, for those who remember, you know, when house phones were a thing, suddenly the line is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Your fax machine doesn't work. I don't know. But the point is, you had communication with the outside world and then it's cut off. And there's something about, you know, in this interconnected age that we live in, there's something about being totally cut off from contact that in the right circumstance can be really scary. And I think it works really well here. So it's a great opening. But at this point in the episode, you know, if you're watching it for the first time, you have no idea what's coming. You're just like, oh, you know, she's lost. Probably will fight some Geonosians. They'll go rescue her. And of course, that's true.
Right.
But it's not the whole story. And it's those details that really make this episode for me.
Yeah, there's like a tension, but you don't quite know why.
Yeah.
But like this, they do a good job. So basically, like, Luminara is able to track Poggle the Lesser to what they're calling the Progate Temple. And when we get to the Progate Temple, it's very, very spooky, and you're just not entirely sure why. There's these creepy statues all over the place. There's this like eerie sound design where there's like some muffled shrieking in the background. There's like cracks in the ground that they say lead down to the catacombs. And anytime, you know, someone's bringing catacombs under a spooky temple into the mix, you know that there's going to be something down there that you don't really want to experience, right? Never has there ever been anything fun and lighthearted in catacombs. It's always, you know, bones or some type of creature or something like that, right? So, you know, right now it's Buzz and Luminara unduly are the ones that are tracking them. Luminara very badly wants to capture Poggle because she thinks that Poggle will have a lot of intelligence to provide the Republic on the Separatist. Obi-Wan and Ki-Adi Mundi, who mentions that he is fresh out of the Bacta tank and almost entirely healed, basically say like, well, we really don't think you should go after him right now. Like, now is not the time. And she's like, we have to, because if we let him go too long, he's going to escape and we're never going to be able to find him. And then we might end up having to come back to take Geonosis a third time, right? Like, we don't want that. We're losing too many troops. Every one of these battles, they mention it multiple times. Luminara mentions it, Ki-Adi Mundi mentions it, but like, we're losing too many troops in these battles. We don't want to do this anymore. So she goes off after him, and they already start having difficulty right from the beginning and getting in contact with her. They mentioned a couple times she's late to check in. Anakin just immediately wants to go after her. Pretty much every time anything happens, Anakin's like, I'm going after her. Like, no, Anakin, just wait for a little bit, you know. But they eventually get to the temple, and she's trying to check in with them, and they get attacked while she's checking in. So now they know for a fact something is wrong, but they can't do anything about it. They just have to kind of wait it out while the sandstorm blows past. So they eventually, you know, they wait out the sandstorm. They manage to make it out to the temple. They find Buzz's body, RIP Buzz. And they also find Luminar's lightsaber, which is, as Obi-Wan says, not a good sign. Yeah. And they're wondering, they're like, Poggle could not have done this. There's no way Poggle could have overpowered a Jedi. But they notice a statue of the Geonosian queen up above an archway. And they're like, maybe that's what did it. And they point out that like, there are legends of Geonosian queens, but nobody has ever seen one. Nobody's ever seen proof of one. So up to this point, they had always just assumed that Poggle the Lesser was kind of the leader of the Geonosians. But his title, the Lesser, kind of indicates that maybe there is a greater. And in this case, there is.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's some sort of expanded universe, sort of like possible explanation for why his title is a diminutive. But obviously, this episode is offering another interpretation, which suggests, you know, Queen Karina the Great, the source title. And, you know, naturally, Obi-Wan and Anakin being confronted with mysterious catacombs, they immediately go in. I do want to note as well that in this episode, Luminara has her correct lightsaber. So in season one in Cloak of Darkness, she actually was using Plo Koon's lightsaber. In terms of like what was shown on screen. And, you know, for people who maybe who were paying super close attention to the lightsabers, you might have caught that. I'd say probably 99.9% of us did not catch that. But I gather that they are, in fact, nearly identical. But Luminara's has some gold plating on the pommel. Yeah, so just kind of a fun little note for any Luminara fans.
Yep. And so they get into the temple. The Geonosians are dragging the unconscious body of Luminara, but she wakes up. And even though she's cuffed and without her lightsaber, she manages to put up a little bit of a fight. But she realizes the Geonosians she's fighting are not feeling pain of any kind. Originally, the storyboard called for her to impale one of them on a stalactite and to have it keep moving after it was impaled. And they ended up being like, that's probably a bit much, even for this story. So they end up just having her like punching them and realizing that they're not, you know, basically they're not reacting to any of the blows other than the physical movement backwards. But she manages to call Obi-Wan and them, and she's like, I told you not to follow me. Like, this is a bad idea. You don't want to come down here. And they're just like, ah, well, you know, Obi-Wan and Anakin just... I think he mentions it later in the episode. He's like, oh, I took a page out of Anakin's book and I decided to disregard those orders.
Yeah, yeah, near the end, he has that line. So we have, you know, a series of scenes in the catacombs here, which even though they pretty much always use metric measurement, for some reason, Obi-Wan describes the catacombs as being miles of tunnels, which is kind of a funny little gaffe in the script writing. But they, you know, they continue through the tunnels. Yeah, so she's warned them. Obi-Wan and Anakin fight the undead Geonosians, who continue to move even when shot or hacked into pieces. This is also where we get our first really clear views of the worms moving through their face openings, which is really takes the creepiness of this episode to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it's one thing for them to be sort of moving in a zombie-like fashion, and to keep moving even when they're shot. But then the worms really sell you on, like, these are zombies. These creatures are not alive. And there is something super creepy about them. There's something about worms. Now, again, it's playing on those core, deep human responses to certain visual stimuli. And a worm crawling over a body into a nose, like a nostril or an eye socket or a mouth. Don't like it. Just don't like it. Like, that is the point, I think, where if a kid is going to have a problem with this episode, it's going to come out right there. Maybe would skip this one with the younger kiddos. Obviously, I did not take that advice, but.
Or you just watch it with them and you prepare them for the world, which is a scary place. You say, this is something that could happen to you if you're not careful. If you talk to strangers, it's possible you get a brain worm and, you know, maybe not. Maybe not a good idea.
Maybe we don't go quite that far.
Yeah. But anyway, so they, you know, Obi-Wan points out, like, well, you know, alongside the legends of the Queen, there's also rumors of a hive mind that is able to so strongly control the Geonosians that it can, you know, control them even after death. And this reminds me so much of the Flood and the Gravemind from Halo, that I still just have to feel like a lot of the Geonosian stuff that they used for Clone Wars was influenced in some way or another by Halo 2 and Halo 3. It really feels like that to me, because the Gravemind in Halo 2 is very, very similar to this stuff. Now, it's not a giant bug, of course, but it's got tentacles, it's got tendrils, it controls undead soldiers, right? Like, it's the parallels are all there. So, you know, they realize they're too deep underground to call for reinforcements, so they go to send two clones back to the surface. Unfortunately, those two clones exist to teach us a lesson, which is you should not split up in this situation.
Yeah.
So those two clones are ambushed very quickly and murdered. And Obi-Wan's like, you know what? Maybe we don't do that. Maybe we don't split up anymore. They do eventually manage to make it down deep into the catacombs. These catacombs things, man, it would spook me out, because how do you know how to get out of the catacombs?
Right.
Like, unless you are really, really good at knowing directions, and they don't use that specific, like, being lost in the catacombs fear for this episode. But it's funny, they do revisit it in another Barriss Offee arc, which is the Tales of the Empire, the finale episode for Barriss Offee, where Lynn goes into an ice cavern and gets lost, right? And I said then that it was a really effective use of tension, because, like, that's a fear that everyone has of going into something and then realizing, like, oh shit, you're lost. You don't know how to get out. I thought they were going to play on that in the catacombs, but they end up not really doing it that way. Right. They end up somehow just knowing how to get around the catacombs. I guess they had a little line behind them, or they were marking the tunnels or something like that, right?
Anakin and Obi-Wan's Jedi senses allowed them to just guess the correct directions, and clones are pretty smart too. So
guess on the way in, guess on the way out, and it all just works out perfectly.
you don't think about it. You just trust your feelings.
Yeah.
Take the turn. I mean,
that
works
for Coyote Mundi, right?
Did.
So they find the Geonosian Queen. They find Luminara. Anakin wants to just go in and murder everyone. The queen's name, by the way, is Karina the Great. So this is the in-universe partial explanation for why Poggle is the lesser. Mm-hmm. It turns out that Poggle is not the leader of the Geonosians. He's just an advisor to Karina the Great. Anakin wants to go in and just murder everyone. Obi-Wan says, no, let's try a different approach. He's curious basically what the queen wants and what the queen is doing. And so he has Cody and all of his men kind of surround the area that they're in. And Obi-Wan and Anakin just walk up, not unarmed necessarily, but, you know, lightsabers not drawn. And they try diplomacy with the queen. The queen does have a good point. She's like, you are the beings who attack Geonosis. Why have you attacked Geonosis? I thought Obi-Wan could have said, well, because Poggle the Lesser is building a weapons factory on your planet.
Yeah.
Did you know about that? But instead, he just says, you know, look, I'm so sorry to have to tell you this, but your rule is at an end. Like, it's over for you. And she says, no, I don't believe that's the case. She says, I think actually, you know, I'm going to control you instead. And Obi-Wan is very interested to see how this mind controlling works. He wants to learn about it, and he's almost willing to sacrifice Luminara to figure it out, isn't he?
Well, that's certainly the way it comes across. In light of how things play out and Obi-Wan's character, I read this as him stalling for time to give Cody a little more time to get him himself and his men into position. And, you know, it does work out that way, right? He doesn't actually let them put the worm into Luminara, but they do get pretty darn close.
Yeah, the worm is on her face. I actually could not remember when I was watching this. I didn't remember if they actually let the worm go into Luminara or not. And so I was a little bit like, oh, wow, that seems like Luminara is surprisingly calm, although she's expressing her dissatisfaction with it. But they're like making a bet on whether or not it goes in through the nose or through the ear.
Yeah.
And even Anakin's like, probably the nose, honestly, which I thought was pretty funny. But then right when it's about to go into Luminara's nose or mouth, I guess, is what it actually goes in through. But they you know, make the signal, and Cody's troopers all turn on their lights, blinding the queen and blinding a lot of the zombies, mm-hmm. and enabling them just enough time to retrieve their lightsabers and free Luminara and kind of back out. And their plan is, because they can't actually kill the zombies, they're just going to shoot all the structural supports and basically collapse the catacombs on top of the queen and on top of the zombies and try to solve the problem that way.
Which, you know, is certainly one solution. And more or less works out that way, right? So, you know, Anakin's able to cut his way through the Geonosians to Luminara and return her lightsaber to her, slaps some handcuffs on Poggle the Lesser and drags him off. And, you know, as the clones blast the supports, they flee the cavern, pursued by dozens of very angry zombie Geonosians. And the structure of the catacombs and the caves that they're in starts collapsing, I'd say arguably a bit faster than they might have hoped. It's not only taking out the Geonosians behind them, but it's also making it extremely difficult for them to climb up and out through the exit that they find. That problem then is solved when the entire cavern complex apparently collapses behind them, shooting the air out of it and launching them out through the opening, where the Jedi at least are able to land quite comfortably. Mm-hmm. I guess the clones are glad they're wearing armor. And they flee and sort of turn back to watch the Progate Temple collapse in on itself. In a moment that to me felt very Indiana Jones.
Yep.
You know, fleeing the collapsing, or reminded me a bit of like the, I think we've talked about the Mummy movies before, with Brendan Fraser, but like fleeing some sort of thing as things collapse around you and behind you.
Mm-hmm.
It has that sort of adventure movie feel to it, which was, I think, a good way to end the episode. A nice change of pace from the horror vibes. Sort of say, okay, well, we've, you know, that was scary, but we've buried it under 1,000 tons of rock. So it's okay, kids. Don't need to worry about the brain worms.
And, you know, you don't necessarily know that Karina is dead. She is, canonically, but it, like, almost leaves it, like, a little vaguely open. Like, you don't see her die. You just see the cavern collapsing around her. But
yeah,
according to Wikipedia, she is, in fact, dead. She never appears again in any of the episodes. Interestingly, and I didn't know this, her design was based on the alien queen from the movie Aliens in 1986. And if you look up a picture of the alien queen, she has that, like, headdress above her head, the same way that Karina the Great does, which is pretty interesting. And she also, you know, is the leader of a hive of aliens. Obviously, she lays eggs. She has a giant egg sack, right? Like, it's all the same thing. So that's kind of where they're going. And hilariously, Dee Bradley Baker voices Karina the Great. Dee Bradley Baker also voices the clones.
Yeah.
And Dee Bradley Baker voices characters in Destiny 2 as well. He's actually Varix in Destiny 2, which is pretty funny. Dee Bradley Baker is a very famous voice actor. He is in a lot of stuff, but yeah, it's interesting that he does pretty much any time they have just like a generic other character, they're like, hey, Dee, can you just do this voice? And then usually he does.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the amount of conversations he has with himself professionally is incredibly impressive. But yeah, so I mean, that's more or less how things wrap up. And I don't know that there's really a whole lot more to say about it. There's not a ton of crazy trivia behind this episode.
Oh, I've got a good one.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. And this is topical to me because I watched Star Trek, the 2009 Star Trek by J.J. Abrams last night.
Okay.
Which, you know, shit on J.J. Abrams all you want. That's a damn good movie. That's honestly a really, really good movie. I was watching it last night. I was like, this movie is so much fun. Like, it is probably the best way you could have done, like, a blockbuster version of Star Trek. But it's got some super, super quotable lines in it. And it is a star-studded cast. And it's funny because it's so old. I think it's from, like, 2009 or something now. That you look at these people, like, Chris Hemsworth is in it. From like before he was Thor,
right?
And I mean, it's just, it's so totally packed. It's such a good movie, and I actually really, really like everyone that they cast in their roles for the Star Trek, like the original series characters. So I love that. But the Geonosian Queen says to Luminara, "You know, your mind becomes my mind. Her thoughts will be my thoughts," which is part of the mantra for the Vulcan mind meld from Star Trek, which is my mind to your mind, my thoughts to your thoughts. So I thought that was pretty funny that they basically used the Vulcan mind meld as something that Karina the Great says when she's talking about how her hive mind is going to control Luminara.
That's funny. Okay. Yeah, I did not catch that. I did see that movie not long after it first came out. I also enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun movie. Which is all I was looking for out of it. And it did have a great cast. There are a lot of, a lot of good, actors in roles that they did well. I can't say that I loved everything about it, but I had fun watching it.
It's a lot of lens flare on it. An awful lot of lens flare.
There is.
J.J. Abrams loved that stuff in like the early 2000s. He was a huge fan of lens flare, and it does get a little bit annoying, but I will say that, like, you know, Star Trek is good. Into Darkness is good. And Beyond, hilariously, was the worst of them. And it's because Beyond, in my opinion, is the most like an actual Star Trek like movie or show, where it's like, no, I shouldn't say boring, right? But it's like an away mission type thing. And it, to me, Beyond was the most Star Trek like, and it did the worst because it wasn't blockbuster enough like the first two were, which I thought was very funny.
It is funny.
I'm probably going to watch. I might watch Into Darkness or something like that tonight, or maybe I'll watch Beyond. I honestly like all of them. I think it is easy to succeed with a movie like that when your casting is like superb. And I was thinking about like every single character they introduced in that. I was like, damn, they did a good job of casting. Even casting, you know, even casting Kirk's dad as Chris Hemsworth, right? And Kirk's mom is the girl, the actress who plays Zoe from How I Met Your Mother. I don't know if you've ever, if you remember that at all.
No,
but Ted's like nemesis girlfriend that is trying to save the vintage building that he's trying to tear down to build a skyscraper, but they date each other. She's in it. She's there for like an entire season, right? I guess she cheated on the captain with Ted or something like that. I don't know how familiar you are with How I Met Your Mother, but it's my wife's favorite sitcom. So we're now like on my third watch through of it because it's what she wants to watch at night, and her probably 40th watch through of it. So I'm very familiar with How I Met Your Mother now.
Yeah, no, I've actually never seen it. I don't think I've seen a single episode of it. But we did, I believe it's on Netflix, and we just got Netflix for the first time in like 3 or 4 years. So we're currently doing, I couldn't even tell you which rewatch of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
We're also watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. That's the one I'm trying to watch. So like my wife wants to watch How I Met Your Mother. I want to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think we're on the last season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We're on the COVID season, which I'm not like super, super stoked about because one, that ages the show really badly when it's like very COVID centric.
Yeah.
And two is like, I already lived through COVID. I don't really want to watch a TV show about it. Like, it is what it is.
That's fair.
Yeah. But that's where I'm on. So I want to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She wants to watch How I Met Your Mother. So we've kind of been alternating going back and forth. I highly recommend How I Met Your Mother. I did not want to watch it at all, because every like commercial I ever saw for it made it look really stupid. But then I actually watched it with her and it is very, very funny. It's actually hilarious. So yeah, I got to give props where it's due. But yeah, wow. We have not talked about Star Wars in like 5 minutes now, I feel like. So anyways,
we have not.
Anyways, time to rate the episode.
You know what Star Wars needs? Neil Patrick Harris.
Well, Neil Patrick Harris loves Star Wars, so that would work out perfectly. And you would know,
I think
if you watch How I Met Your Mother, they're obsessed with Star Wars. Neil Patrick Harris has a Stormtrooper statue in his apartment in the show, and him and Marshall and Ted are obsessed with Star Wars, and every year they do an annual watch through of the original three trilogy movies.
Okay, well, I mean,
it's quite good. There's a lot of Star Wars stuff in it. They make a lot of Star Wars jokes, and it's very funny.
I'm sold now. Yeah. I'm sold. Yeah. Well, let's rate Legacy of Terror. We need to do that.
I mean, for me, I give it a 9, but it's just because I know it's not a 9 of an episode. I know that. Like, it's not a 9 episode, but I like it so much and I have so much fun with it that I'm going to give it a 9. Even though I know that like it does not deserve a 9 in terms of anything it does, but I think I can justify it because it's so unique that there's nothing else really to compare it to in Star Wars, because we don't do Star Wars horror like ever.
That's true. Rating it out of the scary episodes of Clone Wars, it's a 10, right?
Right. Well, it's a 9.5 because I think Brain Invaders is maybe better than it. So I think Brain Invaders is the best.
So it's a very good horror episode. There's just so little competition, unfortunately. However, I am going to give it, I probably would give this episode an 8. It's got a lot of fun dialogue. And the horror motif works really well. It is a lot of fun. I think if they had come back and tried to do more horror episodes in later seasons, we would feel maybe differently, right? We'd be, the later season quality applied to this genre of Clone Wars episode, I think, would have blown us out of the water, and I'm only sad we didn't get it. There is some of that with the Order 66 stuff. I feel like it's not quite in horror territory, but it strays into some of the same emotional motifs of, you know, the people that you thought you knew, suddenly they aren't the people that you thought you knew. It's not quite the same body snatcher vibes, but it is scary. It is a scary episode, but yeah, no, I'm going to give it a +1 and call it a 9 as well. Just for doing something that the other episodes didn't do.
Yeah. It's that uniqueness, I think, that elevates it for me.
Yeah.
Because you're right. If they had done a season 7 horror episode, it would have likely been incredible, right? But because they've never done anything like this ever again, I think the uniqueness of this episode stands head and shoulders above a lot of other episodes. Because we get a lot of episodes that kind of tread the same territory, and a lot of times they improve upon the way they've done it before. But the uniqueness of this episode is such that, like, we've never seen anything like it before or since, really. I mean, I guess the closest you could come would be like the Death Troopers from Ahsoka, right? Like that's probably the closest you could come, but yeah. not quite the same thing. Somewhat effective. I liked it. I appreciated that. I think we talked about it during the Ahsoka show. I appreciated that a lot. I thought it was very cool. But the entire episode wasn't centered around it, right? They were just a side piece, you know, that the main characters were using to further the story. So anyways, we don't have a lot of time left. So I guess if we want to get done with Brain Invaders, we got to move on. So Brain Invaders is basically the idea is that some of the eggs managed to be blasted out of the temple, basically. And a couple of them hatch, and they happen to hatch right next to some clone troopers that are sleeping. And one of the clone troopers, specifically Scythe, gets infected, basically. And this is unfortunate because they point out that even though they need to take Poggle the Lesser back to Coruscant for interrogation, Mace Windu is on Dantooine, and they need medical supplies badly. So Ki-Adi-Mundi, Obi-Wan, Anakin, Luminara decide, okay, we'll send the Padawans to go pick up the medical supplies. And then the Jedi Masters will take Poggle the Lesser back to Coruscant, and then they'll meet up, you know, they'll rendezvous after it, and they'll go to Dantooine to support Mace Windu. Now, interestingly, the reason why Mace Windu is on Dantooine is because there is the original Clone Wars, the Jyndi Tartakovsky one, has a very epic scene where Mace Windu, like, destroys a battalion of droids on Dantooine, right? And so they're not saying that that is canon, but they are just kind of throwing a reference to it. And similarly, the reason why they use Kit Fisto in this is because there is a novel featuring Kit Fisto called The Cestus Deception, which happens on Ord Cestus and involves Kit Fisto. So they've kind of taken two, you know, legend storylines and referenced them here, even if they don't explicitly say what it is that these characters were doing. The assumption is kind of that they're tied to that Mace Windu was on Dantooine doing the things he did during the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, and Kit Fisto is familiar with Ord Cestus because he was there for the Cestus Deception novel, which makes me want to read that novel now.
Yeah, now I am also intrigued, and I, you know, I appreciate that while they're not saying that the Jyndi Tartakovsky Clone Wars events are canon, they're not saying that Mace Windu didn't destroy a battalion of droids by himself.
That have you watched the Jyndi Tartakovsky Clone Wars stuff?
I need to.
It is like power creep to the 1,000,000th level. And there is like, it is extremely, extremely cool. There's also a Jedi master called Shaggy, who looks like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo and is a coward, which I thought was kind of funny. But like, it's a good show. But it power creeps the Jedi to like an unbelievable level of strength, to where like it would be very hard to fold that level of power in with what we know about the Jedi from literally all other canon.
Right.
Like there's the scene in specific that we're talking about here with Mace Windu. He like force crushes 1,000 droids at one time or something like that. It's really, really, it's very, very cool to watch. Because if you're not familiar with Jyndi Tartakovsky's work, he did Samurai Jack.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with that from Cartoon Network, he's got a very, very distinct like animation style. And it fit really, really well with what the Jedi are capable of doing. But it was just like, I felt like he was given free rein to follow the rule of cool. And he followed it. But he followed it to such a level that it was irreconcilable with like actual Star Wars, basically, because it turned most of the Jedi into like unstoppable beings. And even General Grievous was like a freakishly unstoppable being, which, of course, is not what he ends up actually being.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I feel like there's a line in there somewhere. I did watch Samurai Jack actually as it was coming out, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was one of those cartoons back in the day when you had to know when it was on and then you had to be watching TV at the right time. And so I don't know that I caught every episode, but I certainly did my best. I think that's part of why I haven't watched the Clone Wars version, because it never quite like made sense to me. Like it just felt like it was a very different Samurai Jack and And like the Star Wars that I knew, especially growing up, very different genres of storytelling and of action and adventure. And so like I feel like it just it's never kind of been something that's where I've been like, yes, I need to watch that. I've always just been like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be for me. But, you know, at some point I'll run out of things to watch and I'll remember it and I'll probably watch it.
Mm-hmm. Well, so where were we? Yeah, so the Padawans, Ahsoka and Barriss, go off on a frigate, TB-73. Unfortunately, the only time we ever see TB-73, which is the name of this frigate. It is a frigate that is very similar to the Tantive mm-hmm. 4, I guess, which is Princess Leia's frigate. Scythe boards after them with a backpack that very obviously to us has lots of brainworm eggs in it.
Yeah.
And we know things are not going to go great for any of them. So the frigate jumps into hyperspace. Ahsoka and Barriss lie in their beds, but Ahsoka can't sleep. It's too quiet. She mentions after the calamitous noise of war, it is very, very quiet to just be sitting there in silence on a ship in hyperspace. So, you know, Barriss kind of notices that Ahsoka is tossing and turning. And Ahsoka, you know, suggests, well, why don't we go get some food or something like that? Scythe, meanwhile, enters the trooper sleeping quarters and releases a bunch of the eggs, which hatch and find their way into the sleeping clones. And Scythe then leads two of the infected clones to basically kill the ship's pilots, taking control of the bridge. I would have thought that maybe they could have just taken over the pilots, but the pilots have helmets on. So I assume that the worms couldn't get into them quickly enough and they didn't want there to be a struggle. So they just shoot them dead.
That's a good headcanon. Yeah, they don't really explain why they shoot them, but it does make sense. If you look at it from that perspective.
While Ahsoka and Barriss are eating, two possessed clones, Ox and Edge, enter the mess hall and just immediately attack the Padawans. The Ahsoka and Barriss do manage to knock them unconscious. And fairness, they're trying not to kill the troopers at this point in time because they don't exactly know what's going on. But two more clones, Trap and Havoc, come through the door. Havoc is a cool name for a clone.
It's a good name. Yeah.
And all of the clones in this get way more art on their armor and on their bodies than we normally see from clone troopers. They like really went out of their way to make these clones look unique and look special, which is a shame because none of the clones in these episodes ever get shown again in any other episodes. This is their only appearance is in this episode. Trap and Havoc have their guns drawn, but they, you know, say, look, you know, we're on your side. We, you know, we don't know what's going on. We don't know why they would attack you. They set down their guns and they say, you know, we need to go to the bridge and figure out if we're still in control of the ship, because when we try to contact it via comlink, we're not getting any response at all. So Havoc stays to watch the unconscious clones, and Trap and Barriss and Ahsoka head towards the bridge. Also in hyperspace, the Jedi Masters are lamenting the fact that the medical frigate has not checked in for, you know, on time. And Anakin, of course, immediately starts to worry.
Yeah.
And Ki-Adi Mundi is like, you know, we can't really do anything about them. We should just focus on trying to interrogate Poggle, who has been wholly uncooperative so far. And Anakin says something like, she would have checked in if everything were fine. And Obi-Wan's like, would she have, Anakin? Would you have checked in if everything were fine? I really like that. He says, you know, he said, I don't think you recognize how similar you two have become.
Yeah. And it's true, right? Like that's a big part of the storyline, I think, of season two, and the relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka is Anakin recognizing his own flaws in Ahsoka and trying to correct them in her without correcting them in himself.
Right. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yes. Yes. I think that is a refrain he uses more than once.
Yeah. So the infected clones on the medical frigate engage the autopilot and turn on the security shields, which blocks Barriss, Ahsoka, and Trap from getting to the bridge. Barriss tries to override the controls, but Trap, it turns out, is in fact infected, has been playing the long game, and tries to shoot at her. She deflects it and disarms him and notices that he's infected by a brainworm as well. He throws himself at her, and like the worm tries to move basically from him to her, and Barriss kills Trap.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka kills the brain worm. And I was a little bit, you know, surprised by how quick Barriss was to just basically murder Trap, which I know Trap was trying to kill her. But I was surprised that, like, she's just like, oh, well, I guess I got to kill him now, which is interesting because that is the way that pretty much every Jedi, when Order 66 happens, that is how pretty much every Jedi reacts to it, with the exception of Ahsoka. Ahsoka is the only one that doesn't just like attempt to slaughter every single clone that's shooting at her. You know, Yoda senses something is amiss and immediately beheads two clones behind him, right? Doesn't even wait. And he's known these clones for a long time because they were in that very first like season one episode with him, or at least one of them was.
Yeah.
He just kills them immediately. So the Jedi, you know, for all the talk of, oh, I wish we weren't losing so many troops, are real quick when things go bad to just, you know, treat the clones like they're droids, basically.
Well, they certainly don't get attached, most of them, right? And that is the difference between Anakin and most of the Jedi, and then therefore the difference between Ahsoka and her fellow Padawan, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, had their roles been reversed, even if ultimately they were able to, you know, contain the brain worms, I think that Ahsoka would not have survived.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
And
although people might not know what we're talking about because we haven't talked about that part of the story yet.
We haven't talked about that. I hope that they've watched the episode before listening to this, but, you know, right. Here we are.
They contact Master Fisto and they tell Master Fisto that they're going to quarantine the ship. But Kit Fisto is like, no, no, no. Bring it in. We want to study these worms. And it's the same thing that Obi-Wan said. And in my mind, when I was watching this, I was like, that seems like an awfully risky thing to do. It seems like a much smarter thing to do to quarantine the ship. But you have to think about how aliens works. And it's always what always makes things worse is, oh, we want to study the thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can turn it into a weapon or we can make money off of it. Right. That's what always leads to the thing escaping and the situation being significantly worse than it should have been. So even though it was a little, I felt like a little out of character for Kit Fisto to be the one who suggests that, it is very in character for this type of story that they're telling to have that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely in genre to say, yes, let's study it. Right. And that's what we had last episode, right? Obi-Wan wanted to study the worm. He was going to take a live one back with him. He was just carrying it in his hand. And Anakin was like, study the bottom of my boot.
Yep. And right. Squished it.
Yeah. Which
is a great line.
Which is a great line. And, you know, maybe he wasn't wrong about that. But anyways, they also contact Anakin to update him on the situation. Barriss is on her way to the reactor when she is incapacitated by an electrical trap, and the brainwormed clone troopers kind of come out all around her, and one of them says, if there's one thing we clones know, it's how to take out a Jedi. And what a great line to stick into this episode. Love that, man. That was some great writing. Like, somebody saw this opportunity and they were like, I'm taking my shot. It's fantastic.
Some dark foreshadowing from the clones.
Very dark foreshadowing, right? For the clones. But that's what makes it so great. And then we get the very ominous, very creepy scene with one of the clones walking toward her with an egg, a worm popping up out of it. And she's looking scared, and then it cuts away to the hallway, so we can just see sort of like into the room where, you know, hear her screaming, and then a force field pops up and cuts off the sound. And again, just classic horror genre moves the whole way. Always scarier to let you hear the bad thing happening in the next room rather than actually seeing it. And then extra scary if there's screams that get cut off by some sort of, you know, a door slamming, a force field going up in this case. Classic You know, these are cliche moves to pull, but they're executed smoothly and confidently, and I think they work super well.
I'm saying I would have loved for this to have been like the first like horror thing that I watched as a kid.
Oh man,
because I feel like that type of thing would spook me. Like if that was the first I'd ever experienced that specific cliche, like it's effective for a reason. It's effective in this, even with me knowing it's a cliche and that happens all the time. It's quite good though. But then there's a shot following this of Barriss and several of the infected troopers walking through the hallways and Barriss kind of breaking off from them and going in a different direction. There's also a really even spooky for me scene where Ahsoka is finishing this transmission to Anakin, and like it has this shot where she is like staring, looking at this thing, and Barriss is just like right next to her, like silent, just like staring at her through a glass window.
Yeah,
and that was a really effective shot as well, and like that's even a little bit spooky where even as a viewer you're like, oh, like Barriss is just standing there, silent, creepy. Something is clearly wrong, looking through a glass window. And it startles Ahsoka. It startles us as the viewer. And Ahsoka tries to communicate with her, but obviously Barriss is infected. So Barriss, there's another great scene where there's like a stretch of like six or seven great scenes in a row, starting with Barriss getting, you know, incapacitated and getting infected and moving on through this. But she shatters the glass that she's standing on the other side with the Force and throws it at Ahsoka. And Ahsoka blocks the glass from hitting her with the Force, which I thought was really fun. We don't see a ton of stuff like that in Clone Wars, so I really liked it. And then there's a nice little fight that the two of them have where Barriss is actually trying to kill Ahsoka, and Ahsoka is just trying to escape, basically. And she's trying to avoid hurting Barriss.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's tough. Barriss is a talented Jedi or a talented Padawan, and she's fighting to kill, and Ahsoka's not. So it definitely puts Ahsoka at a disadvantage. But Ahsoka, as we know, is perhaps the most talented Padawan that the Jedi have.
Yeah, and that's really the only thing that keeps her alive here. She escapes into the ventilation system. Meanwhile, back on the other ship, Anakin has had enough waiting, right? He needs to know how to deal with these worms. And I think this scene is incredibly ironic for the lesson that we get at the end. You know, Filoni talked in the featurette about it's important to have that lesson at the end for the kids. And the lesson that Anakin gives to Ahsoka is a lesson that he does the opposite of in this episode, I think. He goes to interrogate Poggle, and he attempts to, you know, to pressure him mentally with the Force, right? But this doesn't work, and Poggle kind of taunts him, which shows that Poggle maybe isn't quite up to speed on Jedi Anakin politics and on Anakin specifically. So he taunts him. He's like, your Jedi mind tricks won't work. The other Jedi already know this. And Anakin says, mind tricks? Who says I need the Force to make you talk? And he just backhands Poggle like 6 feet through the air into a wall. And here's where we get just no holds barred Vader foreshadowing.
Yep.
Someone Anakin loves is in danger, and he just immediately turns to the dark side. It's there's like zero question that he is pulling power from the dark side here.
And we even get the Imperial March playing in the background, or a variant of the Imperial March, which is subtle, but not that subtle. You can definitely tell what it is.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Poggle says something and the droid's like translating for him. That's kind of another fun thing here is, you know, Poggle's speaking Geonosian and the droid is translating. Says, you'll never make me talk. And Anakin disagrees strongly, starts force choking Poggle against the wall, which is how we know he's tapping the dark side, right? That's not something that you do with the light side of the Force. That is only something that dark side users do.
So, I mean, he does get the information he needs. he, you know, heads back up to the bridge and informs the other Jedi. He's like, well, Poggle talked to me. He told me about the brain worms. They don't like cold temperatures. So, you know, he calls Ahsoka and he's like, you just need to rupture the coolant system. It'll you know, freeze out the ship, basically. The other Jedi, like, how did you get Poggle to talk? They're like, he's like, that's not really important right now. What's important is that he told me how to stop the worms.
Yeah.
So she releases, you know, she's able to do it. She releases the freezing air into the ship just as it comes out of hyperspace. You know, the clones and everything get weakened by the cold. But Barriss manages to track Ahsoka down and they fight again. Both of them are suffering from the cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barriss slightly more so. She manages to, you know, wrest control from the worm just long enough to tell Ahsoka, kill me, please. Which is a very, very dark line.
Right.
For, and not something I was expecting. I think the first time I watched it, she literally says, kill me, please. And you know that it's Barriss.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ahsoka can't bring herself to do it. And it's a risk that she takes. And she, you know, manages to cut the worm in half that's, you know, that's coming out of Barriss's mouth. Of course, we don't actually know that at the time. It cuts away from it, so we're not entirely sure what happens. We just hear Ahsoka's lightsaber blade, you know, whirring through the air, and we hear it cutting something, but we don't exactly know what it is that she did. But yeah, somehow the tugs that Kit Fisto sent out to stop the frigate actually managed to stop it before it just slams into the medical station and unleashes the, you know, infection upon everyone. This is where this is where Clone Wars is different than Aliens. If this were Aliens, that's what would have happened. Yeah. The frigate would have slammed into the medical station and everyone would have gotten infected and died.
Yeah. Yeah. They would have done all that to stop the brain worms, even succeeded, and then it would have been all for nothing anyways. No, but they do manage to stop it. However, I have to say, I love they really lean full tilt into the horror vibes there, and they milk that scene with Barriss and Ahsoka fighting in the cockpit for everything. You know, like there's no holds barred. The way that they cut away as Ahsoka swings her lightsaber so that you can't see if she hit Barriss or the worm. Like, you didn't have to leave us guessing. Like, we all sort of knew that she wasn't going to actually hurt Barriss. But then you're like, oh, well, we're just not going to tell you, though, for sure. Leave that little bit of doubt. You didn't need to do that, but they wanted to do that. And yeah, it's just a great scene, a great way to end the sort of the saga of the brain worms. And yeah, they wrap things up pretty neatly. The frigate docks at the station. Kit Fisto boards with clone troopers, and they find the poor frozen Padawans lying on the ground. You know, still breathing, but you know, clearly probably suffering from frostbite. Thank goodness that Star Wars technology has moved beyond frostbite being a serious issue. And when Ahsoka wakes up, Anakin is waiting for her, sitting on the end of her bed. She's a little panicky, but he is able to reassure her. She's fine. Barriss is fine. You know, all of the troopers that weren't like actually killed are fine. And Kit Fisto explains that, you know, the parasite is, you know, some sort of native Geonosian worm and the source of the queen's power. I forget what else he says about it. Like, I just watched this. But they do theorize that these worms may be how the Geonosians recaptured their planet the first time, why they were able to sort of throw off the Republic rule in the first place. And Anakin says, well, I'm going to have to tell the troops on Geonosis so that this does not happen again.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to invade it a third time. And after Kit Fisto leaves, Ahsoka tells Anakin that Barriss had begged her to kill her. And she wonders if she did the right thing. She's like, you know, if it all worked out now, but I couldn't have known that it was going to. And if I had been wrong, then the entire medical station might have been infected. And, you know, this is kind of Terra Interrupt, right? Because obviously she didn't want to kill Barriss, but she wonders if being a good Jedi means that she has to make that decision in the future. And this is where, you know, I feel like it's fair to say that I think if the roles were reversed, I do feel like Barriss might have killed Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Ahsoka would have asked her to do so, though. But, you know, as Anakin says, you know, I think Barriss would agree that you made the right decision. And, you know, he sort of says, like, hey, you know, your job is to save as many lives as possible. And, you know, it may have been the case that, you know, killing her might have been necessary to stop the worms, but you knew that it wasn't. And the message I think he's trying to send here is you trusted your instincts and did what you thought was right. And that was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the lesson that she needed, I think, in this moment. And it's a lesson, as he points out, it's a lesson that Anakin himself struggles with. You know, he says, letting go of our attachments is something that we all struggle with, which is just an incredibly ironic thing for him to say, having just tortured Poggle the Lesser mere hours before.
Well, that's why he said we all struggle with it. He didn't say it's something we all have to do. He just said, you know, it's tough. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is, you know. It's ironic. He knows it's a problem, but it doesn't stop him from doing what needs to be done. And I think that's something Ahsoka says to Barriss at some point, that Anakin will always do what needs to be done.
Yeah, she said that when they're in the mess hall, when they're eating and they're talking about peace.
Right.
Right.
She's about to reveal that Anakin's political leanings might be thought a bit extreme.
Yep.
But she never gets to tell Barriss about it. So. Anyways, I think that's pretty much it. Do we have any additional trivia to call out?
Not really. Not for this one, at least. It's pretty straightforward. We know all the references and stuff like that. I mean, I like this one. I like this more than Legacy of Terror. So, like, for me, it's a 9.5. Again, because there's only two horror episodes. This one and Legacy of Terror. And I like this one more. So, therefore, I gave it a 9.5. I know it's not a 9.5 episode. All right. I get it. I do. I just love the darn horror episode so much. And I think this one is so much fun. And I also like Barriss as a character in this. And I just enjoyed everything about it. Like, the idea of being trapped on a ship with this parasite that's infecting everyone, and you're the only two people left, is like, that's a great story. And I like it. And I had a good time. And I thought the story was well-written and it was clever. And I, you know, like I said, there's that stretch in the middle where just like every scene is a banger of a horror, you know, horror scene. And the only difference between like true horror and this is that in this, they don't crash the frigate into the medical center. And in this, they have a time afterwards to like talk about it, where Ahsoka and Anakin have their like mentor-mentee chat about things. And I also really like that. Like, I like the fact that they address that something really traumatic happened to Ahsoka and that Anakin is there to support her like he said he was going to be starting in Weapons Factory, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I like that's the first thing he does is he sits there, waits for her to wake up, and then he talks to her about it. He says, you made the right decision. It doesn't matter if you think it might have been the wrong decision, because it was the right decision. And, like, I think that's such a good lesson to try to teach, you know, someone in a situation like Ahsoka. And obviously, most people in the real world aren't going to have to choose whether or not to kill their best friend or, you know, prevent a parasite from affecting lots of people. But, you know, it's an extreme version of a situation that a lot of people, you know, face, where it's like you could hurt one person to potentially, you know, not hurt several others, or you could try to do the right thing and help everybody. And sometimes the easier thing to do is to hurt the one person. But in this case, the right thing to do was to try to save everyone, which she manages to pull off.
Does. Yeah, I mean, I think in light of giving a 9 to Legacy of Terror, I have to agree and give, I think I probably would otherwise give this one an 8.5 for a season 2 episode. It's a ton of fun. These are some of the episodes I always look forward to rewatching. And this is actually, you know, not a terrible time to be rewatching them. I feel like it would have been great if we could have timed this to be doing it around Halloween, but at least we're in the right time of year, more or less. Yeah, I'm going to give it the plus one for the horror vibes and call it 9.5 as well. It's a season two 9.5. And it's a Clone Wars horror 9.5 same time. Yeah. I think maybe the only other kind of fun note that I've caught here from Wikipedia, for anybody who happens to have the Blu-rays, the season two Blu-ray has a section called Jedi Temple Archives, which apparently has a compilation of deleted brain invading worm scenes called Worm Montage. And I am sad because I don't have that. I kind of feel like I want to see it now.
Yeah, I would also like to see that. Speaking of other stuff I would like to see, I have heard that Lego's like Rebuild the Galaxy is exceptional.
Okay.
Like really, really good. So I think when we finish up season two, we'll probably have a little bit of time before Skeleton Crew comes out. But yeah, I have heard that the Lego Star Wars Rebuild the Galaxy is like very, very good. Surprisingly so. And so I'm really actually interested to watch that and see and maybe talk about that on the show as well. It has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. And that's 100% critical and 86% for audiences. So it's not like it's like, oh, 100% critical and audiences hate it. It's like, you know, I think it's rated at universal acclaim or whatever it is.
Wow. I mean, that's pretty good. That is pretty darn good. Well, yeah, we'll have to check that out. I think that's all from us for this week. And what are we looking forward to watching next week?
It's the Grievous episodes, isn't it? And it Lair of Grievous and or Grievous Intrigue, is that what it is? And the Deserter, maybe? I think we might just have one episode. No. Yeah, it's two episodes. It's Grievous Intrigue and the Deserter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I feel like we're really like almost cheating the way that we've kind of skipped around here and we're just getting so many of the great episodes all in a row.
Hey. It's not our fault. This is the chronological order.
It is.
We're just following the official Star Wars chronological order guide for Clone Wars, which is the way that they should be played on Disney Plus.
It is. It is. I also have to say, I'm really enjoying the fact that I feel like I'm like rediscovering season two.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of forgotten that there's actually a big step up from season one and a lot of great episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Season two. And I feel like I'm like gushing about it every week.
It is significantly better than season one, which I didn't remember. And I feel like the reason why is season two kind of gets lost when you look back on the Clone Wars. Season one isn't great. And I think that kind of tints the early seasons because you don't start getting into like the iconic Clone Wars episodes until, you know, season three plus. And so season two, I don't feel like has any like iconic episodes where I'm like, this is one of the best Star Wars stories of all time, but it has a lot of really fun episodes. And I think in our watch through, that's what we're discovering is that like, sure, there's nothing in season two that is on the same level as like Siege of Mandalore or The Wrong Jedi or Darkness on Umbara. You know, there's nothing or the Mortis arc, right? Like there's nothing in season two that is on that level. Well, that's all right. Cause what season two is just a ton of fun.
It is.
And that is its own, you know, reward sometimes. It's like, sure, it's not iconic, but man, I am having so much fun rewatching these episodes. And I think a lot of it too is the first time we watched through these, we were way more confused about what was going on because there's a lot of stuff that's out of order. And I think that out of orderness and that jumping around made it harder to enjoy season two. And now that we're watching it in order, everything kind of just fits together so nicely that the lack of confusion is allowing me to kind of enjoy these stories as they were meant to be enjoyed a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to agree. The ordering of the episodes has been really great. And yeah, I mean, I'm just going to repeat what you said, right? So like it's such a fun way to experience the Clone Wars, and I think it's inarguably superior. I really hope they give us a channel that plays these episodes chronologically. You know, they have the list. They already know. All they have to do is do it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this week's Beneath Twin Suns. So until next time, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.